Jalen Rose does a hell of a job on TV making a seamless transition to ESPN. He joins us here on 11:30 a.m. WDFN, The Fan. Jalen, growing up in Detroit, could you have ever imagined that you would have been a TV analyst?
Never could have imagined. However, playing a lot of video games from Atari ColecoVision, the list goes on and on, Sega Genesis, PlayStation. I always offered commentary.
Right.
When my friends were playing. That was one of the house rules. If you lost, it's like going to the end of the line, but you got to commentate the next game.
Well, you must not have lost very often, or if you did, you did a good job practicing. Your ESPN documentary on the Fab Five airs March 13th at 9 o'clock. Without giving too much away, what makes this different than books, articles, featured stories on your U of M era with Howard, King, Jackson, and Weber?
The key to what you just mentioned is that 20 years has passed, and the story has never been told from our view. And it's never really been told from an in-depth view. There was the Mitch album, critically acclaimed book, bestseller, who he did a great job of writing while we were in school. ESPN did a 30-minute segment, you know, remembering the Fab Five. Fox Sports did a Beyond the Glory.
Yeah.
But those really the only attempts that have been made to talk about the Fab Five in those couple of years. And I'm very excited to talk about that. There are going to be a lot of things that are discovered in the documentary that people didn't know. There are going to be a lot of things that people forgot how they went down. So I'm really excited to be a part of it. The guys were tremendous to deal with throughout the process then. And we're excited about the story being told in March 13th. As it's going to happen at 9 p.m.
Well, could you give us an example of maybe what wasn't told that people will now be able to get a glimpse of?
Well, really nothing was really told. So everything is going to be fresh news. You're going to see, you know, where the origin of actually, you know, the team cutting its hair bald, or where the idea for wearing longer shorts or black shoes or black socks, or how we were treated by the media then,
mm-hmm.
or how we approached games, how we thought about situations as they unfolded. And it goes into how we all got to Michigan. Like a lot of times when you talk about the Fab Five, the real origin of that team was that you have four McDonald's All-Americans and another All-American in Ray Jackson who were willing to suppress their ego for the opportunity to go to the same school at the same time for brotherhood and to win, because at that time, players weren't leaving high school to go to the NBA.
Right. Jalen Rose joining us here on 11:30 a.m. WDFN, The Fan. A lot of people feel like you really started the ball rolling by getting that group together. Chris Weber followed you. You were the quote-unquote leader. Is that fair or no?
I'm lucky enough that guys put me in a position of leadership. It's hard for me to say that I was the quote-unquote leader, but being the point guard, being, the straw that stirred the drink, put me in a position of leadership. But I just am humbled and appreciated the fact that those guys trust me enough on and off the floor to give me that title.
Well, influential, too. I mean, you're an influential guy. You're charismatic. You've always been that way. Duke and Fife has told me numerous stories about how people will make sure that they want to please Jalen Rose. That's kind of your persona. It always has been. It probably always will be, isn't it?
When I look back at the documentary, and I've been in it since the cutting floor until you guys are going to see it on March 13th, just know that number five that you guys see in that documentary, Ray Jackson calls him Young T.I. I don't even recognize that guy.
Well, I mean, I obviously somebody had to pave the way, and from what we understand, it was always you. Some called, not you, but the group, cocky. Some called you brash. Some would say there was a swagger. Did you guys feel like you had to play with that demeanor, or was it because that's who you really were?
It was who we really were, but it was also an us-against-them mentality. At that time in college sports, things weren't as liberal as they are now. It wasn't as accepted to be five black athletes on the national stage and be bold about it, to talk trash, to have an opinion, to actually go against what was hot at the time. And what was hot at the time was a program like Duke, a program like Indiana. And we all know that those mainstream programs are looked at a certain way. When you sign to go to Notre Dame, You sign to go to Duke, you sign to go to Indiana, you're perceived one way. At that time, when you signed to go play football at the University of Miami, play basketball at the University of Michigan or UNLV, you were viewed another way.
Right.
So we just lived up to it.
Why do you think Michigan teams never won a title? Some said the Fab Five was too much of your identity and that was kind of overriding the true concept of a team.
That's not accurate. Anytime you get on the bus, anytime you're in the locker room, anytime you put your hand in the huddle, you're all for one, one for all, regardless. Mm-hmm. So whether it's nowadays where in Miami they call them a big three, or you just see two players in Carmelo Anthony and Amari Stoudemire form in New York.
And Chauncey Billups.
A team, it's just that there's a core group within the team that are considered the leaders, that are considered the ones that, if they play well, put the team in a position to win on the highest level. There's never a negative about having a core group of guys that's going to be there, good, bad, or indifferent. It's stronger than just having that responsibility rely on one player, because sometimes that responsibility on one player can be way too much.
Jalen Rose, who led U of M in scoring as a freshman, joining us here on 11:30 a.m. The Fan on Shep in the Morning. Were you misunderstood as a group in your mind, and what was the biggest misconception about you guys?
The biggest misconception, and remember, we're talking about the early 90s. We're talking about the times where we still had to go back to our dorm rooms, and keyword is dorm rooms, to hear messages on the answer machine because we didn't have cell phones. That was before Google. That was before YouTube. So a lot of the things that were said about us by a national media, a lot of times was coming from a media that didn't understand inner city youth. They felt like Jalen Rose listening to Public Enemy or Ghetto Boys or Ice Cube meant that I was living out those lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't familiar with hip-hop. They weren't familiar with the inner city culture. We brought an inner city culture. We brought a street flavor to a national stage, and that made a lot of people uncomfortable.
But it also,
and let's just be real, the majority of writers, the journalists, people who are in the know, and people who were able to shape a lot of opinions about us, they aren't black. So they were getting a culture shock as well.
But it also made you very popular. So as many people who might have been uncomfortable, maybe the old crotchety type, there were as many young people, whether they be white or black, who seemed to almost, you know, follow you. You were an attraction for them. They gravitated toward you because of that openness, if you will.
Absolutely, because they felt like we were the team that, if they were put on that stage, that they would enjoy being a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And also, remember, being accepted really doesn't necessarily start with the parents. The parents were like, oh, my God, I don't want my kids to look like this. I don't want my kids to listen to that music. I don't want my kids wearing those long shorts, those black shoes, those black socks. And then they got home and their kids were doing it.
Right.
Then they had to accept it.
Do you think that was a black or white thing? I mean, when I was a kid, my parents didn't want me listening to heavy metal music because they thought I'd turn into a devil worshiper. is that a black and white thing, or is that a cultural thing?
That's all a cultural thing. A lot of times, to be a trailblazer, to be a revolutionary, that means you're doing something for the first time.
Right.
And when you're that person that kicks down the door, a lot of people don't know how to accept you. So a lot of people were accepted with open arms. A lot of people, they just turn their back and say, oh, my God, when will this end? And a lot of what happened during our two-year periods at the Fab Five, this is another thing I want to acknowledge. The allegations that came with Chris Webber, with later Maurice Taylor, Tractor Trailer, Lewis Bullock, that was in 97, 98. I left school in 94 with Juwan. Mm-hmm. Chris left school in 93. In that 4 or 5 year period, and you're going to see a lot of that this year when you're watching college basketball, none of our numbers were retired. We weren't celebrated like we were a great team, the team that helped Michigan go to two of its three final appearances ever. So there were a lot of people that were like, we're glad this is over. And a lot of those people were Michigan alumni, Michigan faculty, and Michigan fans, too.
Does it bother you that the banners are gone, the banners of the NCAA finalists 2 straight years?
Of course it bothers me, because that those allegations turned up to be, A, about one individual and never truly proven. Two, as I just mentioned, we were disregarded as individuals by the university before that. I was just watching Villanova play the other day, and Randy Foy is a pretty good player, and he went to Villanova. He went there for 2 years. They never really made any hay. They retired his number. When you go to North Carolina, you see so many players' numbers retired that you won't even recognize most of them.
Well, look at Illinois. You and I have both been at Assembly Hall. How many times has the Illini retired a player's number? And you look up there and you think, should they have really retired that number in my mind? I mean, it's a good debate. Jalen, let me ask you to hold on right there. I'm up against a break. I'll get to the break. More with Jalen Rose on the other side on Shep in the Morning on 1130 AM WDFN The Fan. Jalen Rose joining us here on 11:30 a.m. WDFN, The Fan. But I see you quite a bit back in Ann Arbor. I see you at U of M games. And, of course, You have the Jalen Rose Foundation. How were you able to reconcile what appears to be reconciliation with the university? Jimmy King is there a lot. Ray Jackson has returned as well. How have you been able to mend any broken fences?
A true love for the maize and blue. It's just changed over the last maybe 10 years where people growing up in the state of Michigan weren't automatically Wolverines. You used to have to be converted to Spartans, for example. Mm-hmm. Now that line has been blurred. And so I have so much love for the school, what it's done for me in so many aspects that I'm still a fan. I'm a fan of what's going on with the football program. Of course, I'm on the sideline slapping helmets. I'm a fan of what's going on with the basketball team. Of course, I'm going to give John Beilein my full support because that's what the kids now deserve. That's what being a Michigan man is all about. And also, for me, it's more than just sports. My initial anchor at the University of Michigan had nothing to do with basketball after I left. It was about an endowment I started.
Right.
And I have a student that's going to be at the University of Michigan for eternity because of that endowment I started.
Yeah,
you mentioned the Rose Garden, having 20 kids go to University of Michigan games. They probably wouldn't get an opportunity otherwise. So it was really bigger than basketball for me.
No, I think that's fabulous. Does it bother you a little bit that not more Wolverines do that, who have played basketball there? You don't have the guys who have done what Steve Smith has done at Michigan State, for example, or Mateen Cleaves has done at Michigan State in their giving back to that school. Does that need to happen more? And if so, how does that go about?
I'll tell you two things that allow that to happen. Number one, there always has to be a linchpin between when those guys were there and the current administration. And so where you see a guy like Steve Smith still back at Michigan State, a guy like Mateen back at Michigan State, that's because Izzo was there at that time.
I got you.
He was an assistant under Judd, and then he was the head coach for Mateen. Michigan has had so much turnover and doesn't have that true anchor that is able to cross generation. And number two, I'm going to flat out be honest with you, that school has done a better job of taking care of its own and appreciating its own, win, lose, or draw, good, bad, or indifferent. Mateen Cleaves can be in the wrong place at the wrong time like he was within the last year, but still be accepted and celebrated at Michigan State. A lot of times when Michigan men are in the wrong place at the wrong time, too many people are quick to turn their back on them and not embrace them. That's what now allows those players not to come back to the program. Like, we have a storied history at Michigan, but also let's not really take for granted the things that a lot of people have brought to the table. Some people think it's all about the school and they forget about the individuals.
Do you know what your other Fab Five teammates think of the university? And if so, can you share that with us?
They think that the mend of the fences will be 100% when the banners go back up.
So in order,
there can never really be a true reconciliation without the banners being placed. That school has been to the finals three times.
Right.
And the Fab Five was there twice.
And it's not as much about it's not as much about your individual jerseys being up there with the Cassie Russells and the Rudy Tomjanoviches, for example, but it's about what you did as a team, right?
team first and foremost. But let's answer the second question. Let's answer the second part of that question. Why is that not even a discussion?
In terms of your individual numbers being retired?
Yes. That, think about it. Like, I've left school since 94. That's never been a discussion.
Yeah. I've always felt like, and I'm not a big believer in putting numbers up for the sake of putting them up, but if they've accomplished something, I'm all for it. Obviously, but I think sometimes some schools and some teams, like the Pistons, for example, go over the top with their celebration of numbers being retired or taken out of circulation, however you want to look at it. I think a lot depends on what that individual does. I'm not sure, quite honestly, that I would retire Chris Webber's number, not just because of what he did and brought some taint to the program at the time, but because he only spent 2 years there.
Well, you got to compare it based on what other schools in the NCAA do.
But why? Why do you compare it to
that's the curve that you're judging on.
Okay, well, you and I have both been at Chapel Hill. North Carolina has retired gobs of numbers of jerseys. You and I just got done talking about Illinois.
And you see those players supporting the program.
Right. Well, but there are some who hardly celebrate any numbers. Ohio State, for example, very few. Jerry Lucas, John Havlicek, there's very few. Don't you think it depends on the school itself?
I think it depends on the accomplishments of those that went to the university and how it's not only remembered by those fans of the school, those administrators of the school, but also on a national level. You can't look at it locally. You got to look at it nationally.
Jalen Rose, a 13-year pro in the NBA, most improved player, NBA finalist with Indy, joining us here on 1130 AM WDFN, The Fan. You spent 13 years in this league, in the NBA. Does it bother you to see what's happened with the Pistons, how it's being handled, and who do you blame for the situation?
Well, it bothers me when the Pistons aren't doing well because, as a native Detroiter, you know, I'm a Piston fan.
Right.
You know, make no mistake about it. They're struggling this year, but I can't say the struggles of the Pistons because they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals 5 years this decade. So they have a history of recent success. This year, I think it's just an aberration. Anytime you're going through an ownership change, it's hard to make roster moves. It's hard to make coaching moves. Players are splintered between being a championship-level performer, a couple of championship-level performers in Rip Hamilton, Ben Wallace, Tayshaun Prince, a couple of big contracts, Charlie Villanueva, Ben Gordon, Jason Maxill. Then you have a couple of young players trying to find their way in Will Bynum, Austin Day. So really it's a team that's splintered and pulling in a lot of different directions, and that's why you're not seeing success on the floor.
But you and I always just got done talking about how you handled your business, how you handled things. The way the Pistons have handled this strife has not been a way that anybody would have liked to have seen it, no matter whether you played the game or not. Even if you're just a fan of basketball or a fan of Detroit, you would have guessed that this team, based on its experience, could have handled things better, right?
Well, adversity doesn't necessarily build character, it reveals it. And everybody is fine when things are going well. When you're getting your minutes, you're getting your money, you're right in first place, you're competing on a playoff team, everybody's happy and able to deal with that. But how are you able to deal with adversity? And obviously, the team and the players in particular have handled adversity very poor.
NBA and its players' union nearing a critical juncture with a new CBA. They and the NFL, quite honestly, fighting over billions, something that most of us can't relate to. What would you tell the powers that be to try and avoid such negative publicity?
Well, this is the one thing that I want fans to always understand. There are salary caps in football and in basketball, and this is what that means. That means if I own the team, I can tell you how much I'm going to pay the 15 players on my roster right now. There's no gray area.
Mm-hmm.
What ends up happening is, as ownership continues to have successful seasons with some situations, have poor financial situations with others, you go back in and you want a bigger piece of the pie because you're the owner. So what I would tell owners and players alike is what you just said, in essence. Fans don't want to see millionaires arguing with billionaires about money. You have to find a way to iron that out and really continue to put a quality product on the football field and on the basketball floor.
Would you want to ever own an NBA team?
Absolutely.
Would you ever look
in? That's a goal. That's a dream. Childhood idols of mine, Magic Johnson, I've seen him in that position. Isaiah Thomas, I've seen him in that position. Mm-hmm. You see Michael Jordan right now with the Charlotte Bobcats in that position. Richardson, the former Carolina Panther player, who's now the owner of that team. So you've seen players put in that position, and hopefully that's in my future.
A final thought. You were viewed as, by some outside Detroit who didn't know you, as the bad guy, the true Detroiter, because Chris Webber wasn't seen as a Detroiter, and the others were not from around here in the hood. And yet you might have been the most gracious with your time with us as members of the media. Were you wrongfully labeled, and how do you feel about being able to shake that stigma?
Well, they just didn't know how to take me. I was an unpolished kid from the west side of Detroit, and I needed a lot of seasoning. I needed a lot of maturing. But a lot of times people judge you based on the decisions you made as a 17, 18, 19-year-old kid. And you hope the dumb decisions that you made during that period of time, you're not making them when you get older. And that's what maturation is all about. I didn't have the infrastructure of a Grand Hill, where my mom went to school with Hillary Clinton. My dad was in the home. He was a former professional athlete. I went to a school like Duke where I was well-spoken, and people always gave me the benefit of the doubt. It was just the opposite coming from where I came from. I needed that seasoning. I needed that maturity. I needed to grow up, except I had to do it on the national stage, and I have no regrets about it.
People don't know how smart you are, do they?
They underestimate that, I think.
Yeah, I think
you
so.
You know,
too.
A lot of times points and rebounds and assists make the headline, but right. People really don't read the story and forget and don't really pay attention that, yes, in high school I was an honor roll student. I made the dean's list before at the University of Michigan. And I actually graduated from college. So
yeah,
that's why education means so much to me. That's why I'm opening the Jalen Rose Leadership Academy for Detroit area youth this September. It's a big-time project. I'm very excited. It's going to take a lot of, my time, my energy, and my money to do it. But I think that's the least I could do to try to give back to my hometown.
Yeah, you could enlighten a lot of people if more people had to talk to you. And have you ever thought, where do you live now?
Detroit area is still my home, would always be, born and raised.
All right, what needs to be?
Anytime you're doing this multimedia thing, you have to spend a lot of time, whether it's in New York and or L.A. You know, Bristol, Connecticut is where I do a lot of my ESPN things.
Right.
And they have me doing a lot of things out of L.A., but Detroit area is and will always be home.
How about politically? Have you ever thought of getting into politics?
Well, watching the great job that Dave Bing has done with the city of Detroit, I think there is a small part of me, I'd be lying to say, that has thought about it, but we'll see what the future holds.
Well, I tell you what, obviously you're good at whatever you do, but you would excel in just about any realm, whether it be politics, media, ownership of a basketball team. Really thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. Really look forward to the Fab Five documentary on March 13th at 9 o'clock on ESPN. But I would say this. I hope people don't judge, whether it be you or anybody else who's part of that group, and I like Jimmy King a lot because he and I used to work together on Michigan broadcast, not judge you based on what they're about to see on March 13th. If they get an opportunity to listen to you talk, hear you discuss some of the various things in life, not just sports and not just basketball, they'll be a better person for it. Thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much. Late for